You guys may ask him. I was looking at my pal list, and there's a lot of people not online right now. It's amazing. On a Thursday night, the list is incredible of the people that are offline tonight. And let's pray that we're able to have a good time tonight, and that we're able to learn something new. I have a new teaching that I'd like to share with you. I've been teaching it now for maybe 2 months. Concentrating more in the last few weeks, basically. I've added more to this since the last time, and you know, I'm very excited to be here. And I haven't been around for a while because I've been so busy teaching, traveling around, doing all that. And I got to be honest, I basically got a little bit worn out with Pal Talk. When I stopped, I started noticing a lot of patterns with a lot of the people coming into the rooms. And it's no longer as edifying as it used to be, only because people are so looking to argue about every little point, and it's disappointing in that sense. But at the same token, we need to share what we're learning for the edifying of the body of Messiah. Would you agree with that? So today's teaching, I would like for you, if you just try to stay to the topic. Normally, I don't like to red dot anybody. The admins have permission to red dot and bounce anybody at their discretion. I have to focus on the teaching because it's going to be a while. I hope you're here. You're here for a little bit. And this is the reason why I do this, is because I like to share with people new teachings that I do. I have a whole bunch of that I've done already, but you know, this point to me is very important. Just because of the consequences of not understanding these principles that has led many people away from following Yeshua as Mashiach. They're no longer following the Messiah, Yeshua as the Messiah, because the Jews, the Orthodox, you know, unfortunately, I'm not talking about the regular Jewish people, I'm talking about the Orthodox, the anti-missionaries. They're presenting proofs to the Christians and the Messianics that Yeshua is not the Messiah, and being that a lot of the Messianics don't really have the study books or are not taught to study properly in certain aspects, the problem that is happening is many of them are rejecting Yeshua for the lack of information. And this is what is happening. Am I really concerned about what Judah really thinks of me? Absolutely not. I mean, I love Judah. Being Jewish myself, it has nothing to do with basically who is who. I mean, we are all walking in obedience to the Torah. We are walking, at least in this room, we're trying to follow what the commandments of Yah is trying to tell us, so we can be obedient and be blessed by following His commandments. Again, we're not talking about salvation in this teaching tonight. We're talking about obedience. Now, I'm going to be here hopefully for about an hour and a half, maybe a little more. So I hope you're not in a hurry. I'm hoping I can stay until 10. I really want to spend time breaking this down. I'm going to tell you why. I need to have some, you don't have to agree with me. I'm not here to argue. I'm not going to take any questions that are going to be posed, you know, here. Anybody who comes in, please understand that all we want to do is just share. And I'm going to learn. I'm going to share what I'm learning. You don't have to agree with me. You don't even have to like me. You know, that's the way it goes. You just want to share what I'm learning. But verify everything that I say. Make sure you look it up. And what I would like for you is for you to have an opportunity to establish a precedent here of why is it that the Jews believe certain things? Why do the Christians do not have a success showing Yeshua to my Jewish brothers? And, you know, the problem is that we're trying to convert the Jews, and, you know, that's not our duty, and that's offensive. To me as a Jew myself, trying to convert a Jew is offensive. I really have a tough time when I go to Israel with my tour. I have a tough time because a lot of these people, some of them that come on the tour, they have an agenda to try to preach the gospel to the Jews. Wait a minute. Why don't you live the Torah first and then you try to preach the gospel to anybody? You know, we have to be honest with what we don't know. And one of the things that is happening in the body of Mashiach of Yeshua is that many people are turning away from Yeshua as Messiah. And they all have one thing in common. The one thing that they have is that they do not understand the temple service. Temple service, the tabernacle, the priestly order. Now, we have to be honest about certain questions that are asked about us as believers in Yeshua. Okay? Now, do you guys ever understood the concept of Mashiach, the Messiah of war in the Bible? In the Bible, there's types and shadows. But in rabbinical circles, and I'm going to show you, and I'm going to quote you some rabbinical circles, rabbinical commentaries today, as a point of reference, so you will see that there is a teaching in rabbinical Judaism that actually lines up with the plan, with the message of Messiah in his first coming and the role of Messiah in his second coming. And this is something that unfortunately Christianity does not really know what to do. Christianity is basically preaching, they're preaching a Messiah as King of Kings and Lord of Lords right now. Now I want to ask you guys a question. Okay, this is a question that I need to get an answer for, because, and I need your feedback on this, because this is the problem that we're having that is causing many messianics or believers in Yeshua who follow Hebrew roots to move away from the Messiah. This is the question. Is the Yeshua at this moment the literal king of the earth? Is he the king of the earth literally? Now remember that when my Jewish brothers, they are looking at Messiah, Yeshua, and we start talking about Messiah, these are the requirements of how Christianity presents him. Christianity presents a Messiah that is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, when in fact, these are the requirements of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords in Mashiach. First, he has to come riding on the clouds on a white horse. Second, he has to destroy Amalek. Third, he has to rebuild the temple. Fourth, he has to restore the 12 tribes of Israel. Five, he has to declare peace on the earth. Six, he has to set up a kingdom in Yerushalayim. Now, this is only six of maybe about 13 requirements. This is the most basic requirements of Judaism as their expectation to the Mashiach. So, the question is to you, if Yeshua is the Messiah, which you and I would agree that he is, but if Yeshua is Mashiach, then has he fulfilled any of those requirements as king yet? Has he done that? And here I require you guys to give me your feedback. Okay? Shalom, shalom, Rabbi Mordechai. And so the question is, has he fulfilled those requirements? Has he destroyed Amalek yet? Has he done any of those things? Okay? Okay, so let's find out whether or not Yeshua is basically the true Messiah of now. So he has not fulfilled those requirements. So how can we prove that Yeshua is the Messiah of Israel? How can we prove that without going to Isaiah 53? Because right now, even the Orthodox anti-missionaries can argue with you. And they make a compelling case that is about Israel. It's not about Yeshua. It's not about Messiah. When there's a host of commentaries of the own rabbis that say otherwise. Well, it's about both. The problem is that, you know, we are doing a lousy job living Torah, first of all. We're not doing a good job following the statutes and commandments of Yahweh, let alone we're not really studying their books to understand what they're thinking about. So the question is, how do we present Yeshua in a manner in which the Christians will learn the role of Messiah? So the questions are these. Now, I really want you to pay attention to this, because I know that there's going to be one person who is not really listening, who is going to say that I said something that I didn't say. You get what I'm saying? You follow my drift? So I really want you to pay attention because it's being recorded. All right? Now, in Proverbs 18:13 says this, he who gives an answer before he hears, that is folly and shame to him. So please allow me the opportunity to state my case, to share what I'm learning from you. I mean, what I'm learning about the Torah and some of the rabbinical decrees that I'm learning, and then we're going to go from there. And remember that we're going to be talking about the roles of Messiah, the role of Yeshua in the first coming, and the role of Messiah in the second coming. Okay? Second coming. And we have to really take the time to explain this. So the question is this. First question I'm going to ask you. And give me some feedback. Stay with the question. Now, it's not for debate. I'm only trying to pose the question to see what you're going to say. And then just go from there. Question number one. How can we believe in Yeshua and not be in idolatry? The first question, and this is one of the main reasons why a lot of messianics, they turn away from Yeshua, because Orthodox Judaism says that we are in idolatry because we're worshiping Yeshua, which, in fact, you know, we're going to explain that today. Second question, should we worship Yeshua now? That's the question. What did he say? Did he say to worship him? Did Yeshua, at any time during the time of the ministry, did he actually went out looking for the worship himself? Now, does it mean that he doesn't deserve the honor and the glory? That's not what we're talking about. That's why I want you to pay attention. Let me ask you the questions, and then we're going to answer them, okay? Now, another thing is which is the role of Messiah at this time? Now, 88 Judah, 88. Now, I want you to pay attention because, you see, this is going to answer that question. And I'm going to go off of what you just said. Now, when you say the word God to an Orthodox Jew, the word God to an Orthodox, to them, what are they thinking? The Father, or the way Christians think, the Son? To an Orthodox, when you say the word God, which, by the way, is not in Scripture, it's not in the Bible. The word G-O-D is not in the Bible. Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is in the Bible. Elohim, Adonai, El Shaddai. You know, Sidkenu, all those are. Elohim, right? But the word God, when you talk to an Orthodox, he is in reference always to the Father. This is why the Orthodox have issues when you tell them that Jesus is God. Because their reference, their understanding, the way they're thinking, their thinking is the Father. See, that's the way they've been taught. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Okay? They believe that the word Echad is actually absolute one, when in reality it's not. But anyway, that's another teaching in itself. So what is the problem is, when you talk to a Jew, or when you talk to me, and you tell me, Rico, Jesus is God, I'm going to tell you, I want you to pay attention to what I'm going to say. Because if you're not listening to what I'm going to say, you're going to think that I'm saying something that I'm not saying. If I'm thinking in the context that I'm learning, okay, when I go to Israel and I talk to the rabbi, some of our friends of mine, okay, and all of a sudden they tell me, is Jesus God? Understand that I know what they're thinking when they use the word God and it's the Father. I tell them, no, he's not the Father. But then I turn around and I tell them, I believe Yeshua is a Tzaddik. I believe Yeshua is the Kohen HaGadol, the high priest. I believe Yeshua is the Memra, the image of the invisible God, exactly what Paul says. Now, what's curious to me is that Yeshua never asked, he never asked for worship. He never rejected it, but he never asked for it. Why is that? So which is the role of Messiah? And we're going to answer these questions as we do the story, as we do the teaching. Now, when is honor and reverence given to Mashiach? That's the question we need to understand. When is the time in which we give honor and praise to a Mashiach? Is it now, or is it when he comes in the clouds? And then we're going to study this, and we're going to let Scripture speak for itself. And by the way, this is why I can serve my Yahweh, the Father, and I believe Yeshua is more than a man. Let me tell you what I believe. I believe Yeshua is pre-existent. In other words, he was there, he's the Memra, he's the Word. He's a Tzaddik, he's a high priest, a Kohen HaGadol. He sits at the right hand of the Father. I do not believe that Yeshua is mere just a man. I believe that he's more than a man. Now, but I'm going to refrain from using the word God. I'm going to tell you why. Because the word God, according to the anti-missionaries, and I'm sure some of them will come in, the word God is always in reference to the Father, and we're not talking about the Father right now. We're talking about the Son, the role of the Son. And to who is the glory and the honor supposed to be given to? Right now. Are you following me? Right now, to whom is the glory and honor to be given to? Amen. Yahweh, right? Now, what is the role of Messiah right now? And this is the biggest stumbling blocks of Christianity, because they have no idea. They are presenting the wrong role of Messiah right now to anybody who wants to hear. So therefore, Yeshua, he's doing the role of the Kohen HaGadol, the high priest. Do you worship the Kohen HaGadol? Or is the duty of the Kohen, of the high priest, to bring intercession, to do the service in order to present yourself before the presence of Yah? No, the priest, his job, his role, is to be able to intercede in your behalf so that you can have one high priest, once and forever, who doesn't die, who sits at the right hand of the Father, who's not in the earthly tabernacle, but the heavenly tabernacle. And that is
the concept of the teaching that we're talking about today. Is Yeshua doing the role of the king right now on the earth? Absolutely not. Now, but then you have another interesting concept. Another interesting concept that we need to understand about is this. You have Yeshua, the temple priest now, but then you have Yeshua, the priest of war in the second coming. And that's a role of Mashiach that, in my opinion, very few messianics are talking about. How many of you in this room today have ever heard of the rabbinical understanding of the priest of war before? Priest of war? And they connect it with Joseph, Messiah, Ben Joseph. They connect the priest of war and Messiah Ben Joseph. Exactly, in regards to Pinchas. And we're going to explain this today. And I'm going to prove to you biblically that Yeshua, he basically defined his role the first time. But because Christians are trying to teach that he is Lord of Lords and King of Kings right now, and they have completely disregarded the Father, and they are worshiping what is not even the real Hebrew Messiah, they are worshiping an image of a Greek god called Zeus. Therefore, they're not following the feast, they're not eating kosher, they're not following the Torah, they're giving, the hierarchy in the heavens is out of order in the Christian theology. Therefore, they are finding themselves in idolatry, and this is why any Jew in their right mind who understands Torah would never leave Torah to follow this Jesus that the Christian church is preaching. Even though the Christian church does have, is Joseph, Joseph speaks like an Egyptian, he acts like an Egyptian, he looks like an Egyptian, so his brothers do not recognize him. I do understand the role of Mashiach, and I do understand, and even the rabbis understood, that Mashiach will first come and hide himself for a while, and then he will reveal himself, and they're connecting it to this parasha for this week, for the story of Joseph. Now, in my opinion, this teaching is very important to me because it allowed me to understand exactly the role of Messiah. So I could believe Yeshua is pre-existent. I could believe that Yeshua is more than just a man. I could believe that Yeshua is a tzaddik, which in rabbinical circles, the word tzaddik carries a lot of weight. I could believe that Yeshua sits at the right hand of the Father. I could believe Yeshua is Ben Adam, the Son of Man. I can believe that Yeshua is everything he said he was and still not find myself as an idolater. Because Yeshua always redirected our prayers to the Father, our worship to the Father, and I'm doing exactly what the Messiah did, and I'm doing exactly what the Messiah said to do. So therefore, let's continue this. Let's go to Pinchas. Pinchas, it was a priest of Israel, and there's where you get the first priest of war. If you study if you read the story of Pinchas, okay, brother, we're not talking about that, okay? We're not talking about salvation. Please, stay with the subject, okay? All right. So now, in Numbers chapter 25, that's okay, no problem. It says, verse 1 through 7, we're going to read them. It says, and Israel, let me post this so you guys can have it. This is Numbers 25. We're going to read the story of Pinchas, and then we're going to connect it with the priest of war, and I hope that you'll be blessed with this teaching. It's very significant, so please don't write on the screen right now so we can follow along. It says, and Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab. And it says, and they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods, and the people did eat, and bow down to their gods, and Israel joined himself unto Baal Peor, okay, which is another god. The word Baal can also mean husband. Okay? It says, and angered Yahweh and was kindled against them, against Israel. And Yahweh said unto Moses, take all the heads of the people and hang them before Yahweh against the sun, that the fierce anger of Yahweh may be turned away from Israel. It says, and Moses said unto the judges of Israel, slay ye everyone, his men that were joined unto Baal Peor, and behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brethren a Midianite woman in the sight of the people, and in the sight of all the congregation of Israel who were weeping. Okay? Who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. Now, on verse 7, it continues and it says, and verse 7 says, and when Pinchas, the son of Eleazar, thank you for posting the verses, when Pinchas, son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation and took up a javelin in his hand. Verse 8. Okay, and it says, and he went after the men of Israel unto the tent and thrust both them through, the men of Israel and the woman through her belly. So the plague was stayed from the children of Israel, and those that died were 24,000. So here, we have something really interesting. You see the righteous indignations of Pinchas, and Yahweh made a covenant of peace with them. Now, this is very significant, and we're going to cover that in a minute. But before that, let me show you what the duty of the priest are. Let me show you the character of a true Levite priest. A true Levite priest, according to Malachi, chapter 2, verse 7 and 8. Malachi chapter 2, verse 7 and 8 says, the Torah of truth was in his mouth, and iniquity was not found in his lips. He walked with me in peace and equity, and did turn many away from iniquity. For the Kohen's lips shall keep knowledge, and they shall seek the Torah at his mouth, for he is a messenger of Yahweh of hosts. Now let's read it backwards. Let's read the verse backwards. You are a messenger of Yahweh Sevaot. Okay, if you keep knowledge, which is the Torah, and you seek the Torah out of his mouth, the priest, to keep you from iniquity and keep you from sin, therefore, now you walk iniquity and peace. So therefore, anybody who calls themselves a messenger of Yahweh, and they're not teaching Torah, and they're not teaching you to follow after Yahweh in his Torah and the commandments, he's a false prophet, according to Malachi chapter 2, 6 and 7. So the duty of a priest is to keep you from iniquity. So do you actually believe that Yeshua is going to come to the world to tell the world, the whole Christian world, that the law is no longer relevant for them? Do you think Yeshua, who kept the Torah, will tell the Gentiles that, hey, that's okay, you don't have to follow the law now because I kept it all, and you don't have to do it because, you know what, it's too binding for you? Nonsense. Either we misunderstanding these things, or we are in gross idolatry and we don't even know it because we keep following the teachings of men instead of listening to the words of Yahweh in his Torah. Simple. Now, what does Genesis 29:34 says? And she conceived again and bare a son and said, now this time will my husband be joined unto me. That's what Levi is all about, to join you and the Father. That's what he's trying to do. That's what the priest, the character of the priest, is to unite the body of Israel with the Father. That's the duty of the intercessor. And that's exactly what Yeshua came to do and continues to do until he comes in the clouds on a white horse. But right now, he's not doing the duty of the king. He's doing the duty of the high priest. And let's continue. Now, in Genesis 35, verse 25, and I'm going to quote three verses because I want to show you the character of the Levites, in which even Pinchas has the same character in his personality. Watch this. Look how feisty these people were. Now, in Genesis 34:25 says, and it came to pass on the third day when they were sore, this is the story of Shechem, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brethren, took each man his sword and came upon the city boldly and slew all the males. Now, these people, whether or not it was right or wrong, let me show you how this is so prophetic to the last days. This is so prophetic to the last days because right now, you see, Dinah, who is the last daughter of Leah. Leah has seven kids, six boys, one daughter. There's 6,000 years, and the 7,000 year is the year of the 1,000 years of the bride, the female. The bride who's supposed to be a virgin, but she has been raped by the people of Shechem. He's been raped by the system. In Israel right now, the people who are dwelling in the mountains of Yerushalayim are basically the descendants of this Canaanites or whatever, the Palestinians or whatever they are. And they're raping the bride. They are trying to kill the bride. They're defiling the bride. They're doing all this stuff. But you know what's interesting? Jacob is trying to make a covenant with the king of Shechem instead of killing them for defiling his daughter. That's exactly what Israel's doing right now. They are trying to make a covenant with the people of the Palestinians in order for them to come into a covenant and peace, instead of raising up and killing them from being defiled and being unclean. Now, do you know what this whole Gaza thing is all about? You want me to really tell you what? Not only is prophecy talking about Gaza being destroyed, we already know that. But do you know what this is all about? I'm getting off the subject. This is all about politics. Because Abbas and the Palestinian community in Shechem over there, they will not come into an agreement until they get rid of Hamas. And Hamas is controlling Gaza. So therefore, the Israel gets rid of Hamas, and then Abbas is going to be reestablished as the leader of Gaza and the West Bank, and now you can have peace. This is a political ploy. But you know what's interesting? Yahweh is using their way of doing things in order for him to establish his will. And that's the beautiful thing. He's basically... He's moving all the chips, you know what I mean? He's moving everything around according to his will. So here we have these guys, the Levites, that basically react upon impulse for righteousness. It's called righteous indignation. In righteous indignation, you also see it in Exodus 32:25. The children of Levi did according to the word of Moshe, and there fell all the people that day about 3,000 men. Now, what's interesting is that when Moses came down from the mountain, let me show you something prophetic. Check this out. Moses goes up to the mountain the first time. The people counted, miscalculated the time of the arrival of Moses, their Messiah, their Redeemer. He brought them out of Egypt. He showed his right arm. You know, he was strong. He was a type and shadow of Messiah. All of a sudden, Moses goes up to the mountain. The people miscalculate the time of his return, and they begin to worship the golden calf. The golden calf in that story is a type and shadow of the Antichrist. And here we see when the pre-tribulation rapture people miscalculate the time of the return of Messiah, and they don't see Messiah come down in the clouds, they're going to worship the Antichrist. Here, guys, that's prophecy from Exodus chapter 30, 31, 32. We see this old patterns going around. And we don't see it because the Christians are preaching Jesus loves you, and that's the only thing they preach. That's the only message they have. And the Messianics are arguing about every petty argument there is, trying to establish their own way of doing things. And we are blowing our prophetic calling. We really are. And I hate to say this because some of you are really zealous for the Torah. And I know that you want to do the right thing, but we need to focus on the things that we need to focus is living the Torah and walking according to the commandment. Do you know how many Messianics are going to Judaism and rejecting Yeshua just because they do not understand the biblical principles, because they still don't want to get their minds away from Christianity? And when there comes a Jew who understands Hebrew better than they confuse them, and then they take everything. Be careful, what does it say? Do be careful of the teachings that Rico passes off as Jewish. I don't even know this person. Whatever. I don't know what that means. But anyway, they must really know all of my teachings. Okay. Anyway, there we go. Ezekiel 44:15. See, this is what I mean. You know, this is why I stopped coming on Pal Talk. You know? This is crazy. This is why I stopped coming. I'd rather go to people I really want to hear, you know? Anyway, Ezekiel 44:15 says, "But the priests of Levites, the sons of Zadok, that kept the charge of my sanctuary, when the children of Israel went astray from me, they shall come near to me to minister unto me, and they shall stand before me to offer unto me the fat and the blood, says the Lord." Okay? So here we see that the sons of Zadok are going to be in the millennial reign, officiating in the third temple, right? Isn't that what it says? All right. So therefore, we got a problem. You see, it says Ezekiel 48:11 says this, "And it shall be for the priests that are sanctified of the sons of Zadok, which have kept my charge, which went not astray when the children of Israel went astray, as they..." Let me see if I have some other verse here. No, sorry. I cut it off there. I got to fix that. Anyway, so the point is that the sons of Zadok did not went astray. They stay faithful. Even in the idolatry of Israel, they stay faithful to the commandments of Yahweh. Now, we got a problem, guys. Yahweh made a promise with Pinchas in Numbers chapter 25, verse 11 and 12. And we're going to read that right now. We need to answer this. if not, we're going to have a huge hole in the way we believe in Messiah. Pinchas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, that had turned my wrath away from the children of Israel, while he was zealous for my sake among them, that I consume not the children of Israel my jealousy. He says, wherefore say, behold, I give unto my covenant, I give unto him my covenant of peace forever, perpetually. Okay? And the verse it says forever, le'olam. So this is a le'olam, perpetual covenant. Wait a second, we got a problem. Is there a temple right now? Is there a temple right now, guys? No, right? Please do not put up any websites up unless you go through the... I don't mind if you do, just let us, you know, make sure that you go through the admins before you do that, out of respect, okay, guys? Just because I don't know some of you and I don't want you guys posting something that is not cool. So now, Yahweh makes a covenant of peace with Pinchas. We got a problem because there's no temple, okay? There's no temple literally on the earth right now, which, by the way, did you know that if there was a temple on the earth right now, Yeshua is not Mashiach? Because there was forgiveness for unwillful sin. Unwillful sin, the fact that there's no temple right now, can only lead us to believe that the book of Hebrews is correct 100% in letting us know that, you see, Yeshua is the high priest, not of the earthly tabernacle, but the heavenly tabernacle. But let me get back to the context there. So it's a covenant of peace. The word shalom, which is a shin, lamed, vav, mem sofit. Let's focus on the vav. Now, the vav in the word shalom in that verse is called the broken vav. In other words, when you go in the Sefer Torah, in the Hebrew text, when you look in the scroll, the vav is broken. Now, there are many teachings in rabbinical Judaism as to what that means. Because you see, according to the way the rabbis do things and the way the scribes do the Sefer Torah, they're not allowed to have any kind of writings. Now check this out. The laws of writing a Torah scroll are called Soferut. There are over 4,000 laws or rules used by scribes to prepare a kosher scroll. For instance, the Torah must contain exactly 304,805 well-formed letters in 238 columns or pages, and the 48 columns or pages are called amudim. Every jeriach, which is the parchment, must come from a hide or a kosher animal that has been specially prepared for the purpose of the writing. Special ink are used, and whenever a scribe writes any of the seven names of Yah, of God, he must say a blessing, you know, Leshem Kedusha Hashem, and dip his quilt in fresh ink. A Torah scroll may contain no errors of any kind, and it's considered pasul, invalid. Each line of every amud, of every column, is carefully read backwards by the sofer and compared against the working copy, the tikkum. It's called the tikkum. If an error is detected, okay, it must be removed from the scroll and buried in a geniza, which is a sort of cemetery and repository for sacred texts. Okay, so these people are very zealous about the way they do things. Now, what's really intriguing here is that the broken vav, according to the rabbis, okay, it's very interesting. It's talking about different teachings. You know, they say the vav typified a man. The top of the vav is the head. The bottom of the vav is like a, you know, the body is like an upright man. Whatever the number of the vav is, numerical value 6, which is the vav, you know, the number of men and things like that. But also, the soferut, which is the laws concerning the scribal art of writing sefrei Torah, requires that all Hebrew letters will be well formed. That is, no letters can be touched. Can touch other letters, or no letters can be malformed, broken, or otherwise illegible. Now, I got a question for you. If having a broken letter in the Sefer Torah is against their laws, how come they have allowed the broken vav in the text right here in Numbers 25? And this is something that we need to ask the question. So what is the teaching? I could give you my opinion based on what I understand. covenant of peace. What if I submit to you, again, this is just my opinion now, okay? This is the gospel according to Rico chapter 3 verse 5. So I want you to understand that I'm going to give you my understanding. Not the rabbinical understanding, just my understanding about this. I believe that in order for Yahweh the Father to keep His word, because He did make a covenant of peace with Pinchas, and a covenant forever, Le'olam, in order for Him to keep His word, the temple needed to be destroyed so that the high priesthood, the descendants of Pinchas who were high priests, would not have a place to officiate the Yom Kippur sacrifice. The Yom Kippur sacrifice. So, but when Messiah will come back, and one of the signs of Mashiach is that he will rebuild the temple. Who do you think will go in there and officiate again? Tzadok, which are descendants of Pinchas. Did that make sense to you guys? This is how perfect Yahweh's words are. In order for Him not to break His commandments, He allows the temple to be destroyed. He establishes a high priest in the order of Melchizedek to officiate in the heavenly temple, not the earthly temple. And therefore, when Mashiach comes, then the temple will be restored. And who do you think is going to be officiating there? The sons of Zadok, which are the sons of Pinchas. Now, we already saw this whole great tribulation problem in the story of Antiochus Epiphanes, the Maccabees. And we see that the Maccabees, Judah Maccabee, he did the same thing Pinchas did. One of the tax guys, one of the messengers of the king came in and tried to entice the people to follow the king and to worship their gods. They build an altar to their gods, and Maccabee, he basically took up arms and he killed the guy on the spot and destroyed the altar. And he had the righteous indignations of Pinchas when he did that. Now I believe this is exactly what Yahweh is looking for in these last days. People that are willing to stand up for His righteousness. Now, remember what I told you. We have a problem because in the millennial reign, I got to ask you guys a question. I need you to answer for me. Do you see Messiah offering sacrifices in the millennial reign? Temple. All we see is somebody called the prince. But can you agree with me that we don't know who the prince is? The Bible doesn't tell you. The Bible really doesn't tell you who the prince is. We can say it's Messiah. Okay? Let's just for 1 second say that is Messiah. Okay? Just for 1 second. Let's just say that prince is Messiah. Okay? Would you agree with me? Just Messiah. Okay? How many of you here have studied the book of Ezekiel? Give me ones or twos. How many of you have studied it? Okay, so we have a couple of ones. Not many people are giving ones or anything. Okay. Did you know that there's no Ark of the Covenant in the millennial reign? Did you know that there's no veil in the Holy of Holies? Did you know there's no Yom Kippur sacrifice in the millennial reign? So therefore, the prince is doing reconciliation sacrifices that has nothing to do with Yom Kippur. The whole book of Hebrews is about one sacrifice only. It's about Yom Kippur. So you see, this is how you see how everything is in perfect order. Because we are going to be dwelling on earth. The problem is the Christians believe they're going to be dwelling in heaven, when the Bible doesn't say that anywhere. Actually, Revelation chapter 5 verse 10 tells you specifically that we're going to dwell with Him on earth. We're going to be king and prince with Him on earth. So if Yeshua be on earth, He could not be a high priest. Why? Because even the book of Hebrews tells you the priesthood is supposed to come from Levi on earth. On earth, because He established it on earth. Now for 1,000 years, the sons of Zadok will be back in the temple officiating, as what it says. After 1,000 years, I have no idea. But now that we have that cleared up, did that make sense to you? This is the foundation. If I don't establish this, there's going to be water holes in the whole teaching, and I don't want to do that, okay? Yeshua is in the role of the Melchizedek priesthood right now. So the question is to you, is He doing the role of the priest in the temple or the priest of war right now? Which one is he doing right now, guys? And by the way, if you don't connect the teaching of the priest of war with the teaching of the priest of the temple, you're never going to get the whole important principle that you see in the New Testament. But because people are not studying the New Testament, Hebraically they don't see it. What is the role of the Messiah right now? Is he doing the priest of the temple, or is he doing the priest of the of war right now? Okay, the priest of the temple. Now, you know what's really interesting? If he is the priest of the temple right now, so when he comes, he is coming as king and priest. But you see, did you know that there's a particular teaching, and even in rabbinical Judaism, that tells you about the priest of the temple versus the priest of war, and how the priest of war will disqualify himself, and we're going to cover that in this teaching. But before we do that, I want to establish the role of Messiah from the New Testament. Are you guys with me? Are you enjoying this teaching so far? Okay, good. This teaching to me is very important, only because it allowed me to see Yeshua as a pre-existing Messiah and not find myself in idolatry, because in the heavenly hierarchy, there's perfect order. And unfortunately, when people, especially my Christian brothers, love their heart, bless their hearts, and we have to have a little bit more compassion on my Christian brothers, because we came out of that system, okay? And we're still trying to get rid of all the baggage. Do I worship Yeshua right now? No. Does he deserve the honor and the glory? Yes. But did he ask for it? Did he ask for it? Absolutely not. And he says that in John chapter 14, 28, he says, "You heard now how I told you I go away, and I come to you. If you love me, you will have rejoiced, because I say I am going to my Father, for the Father is greater than I." Did Yeshua say that he's greater than the Father? Absolutely not. Yeshua is saying the Father is greater than I. Paul never said that Yeshua is the Father. Paul said that Yeshua is the image of the invisible Elohim. By the way, who do you think that is? The Memra. This is very well known in the Targums. The Zohar speaks about this. By the way, guys, I'm going to quote some rabbinical commentaries. I don't want you to begin judging me because I'm quoting some rabbinical commentaries that you may not want to study, because you've been told that it's all bad because it's Jewish stuff. I want you to be tolerant, and I want you to open your hearts to understand that I'm going to show you the roles of Messiah through their own rabbinical commentaries. You see? But we have to prove through the Brit Hadashah, what did Yeshua say? What did he say? Let's go to Matthew 26, and we're going to establish the role of Messiah. The role of Messiah, whether he said he's coming as the king, or if he's coming as the servant, Messiah ben Joseph, Messiah ben David. Yeshua is doing the role of Messiah ben Joseph or Messiah ben David. That's what we need to answer. Christianity preaches Messiah ben David. The Orthodox are looking for Messiah ben David, but they're not looking for Messiah ben Joseph right now. See, they're looking for Messiah ben Joseph. They believe in Judaism that there are two. There are two Messiahs. Ben Joseph and Ben David, which is a relatively new concept, because they used to believe, the ancient teachers, they believed that the Messiah would do both. They just couldn't reconcile how one man would do two roles, so therefore they broke him down into two human beings instead of one doing both. Let's find out what Matthew 26 says, and let's break down what the words of Yeshua, so you understand what I mean. Alright, let me do one verse at a time. Can somebody post verses for me? I'm looking at Matthew 26, verse 60 to 61. Matthew 26, actually get 63 to 65, and I put in the first ones. Okay? It says, watch this. This is when the false testimony came against Yeshua in verse 59. It says, "And they found none, even though many false witnesses came forward, they found none, but at least two false witnesses came forward," right? "And they said, this man, Yeshua, said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and build it in 3 days." I got a question for you guys. Didn't Yeshua said that? He did say that. He says, I'm going to destroy it. But was he talking about the physical temple? Or was he talking about the structure or his own body? He's talking about his own body, not the structure, right? But you see, the next verse is very important. It says, then the high priest stood up and said to him, have you not answered? What is that this testify against you? Can you post 63 for me? There you go. Thank you. But Yeshua held his peace. Right there we're going to focus. Right there we're going to focus. Let me ask you guys a question. Do you all believe, if you believe in Yeshua and you're in the room, do you believe that Yeshua was perfect? That he was the son of Elohim, that he was perfect? Give me some feedback so I can continue. So how can he carry the sin of the world if he never sinned? How can he carry the sin of the world if he was perfect? How can he carry the sin of the Gentiles or whatever, which I don't believe the gospel was originally for the Gentiles. It was for Israel. And any Gentile who believes in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you know, has to be grafted in. How can Yeshua carry the sins of Israel and the world if he was perfect? With silence, exactly. Because in Leviticus chapter 5, verse 1 says this. And I'm going to go back to the other one. In Leviticus chapter 5, verse 1 says this. If anyone sins in that he hears the voice of an adjuration, remember the high priest adjured Yeshua. Yeshua to say something. He being a witness, whether he has seen or known, if he does not report it, then he shall bear his iniquity. In other words, when Messiah didn't speak a word to the false testimony that was coming across by the false witnesses, Yeshua could have justified himself. But when he kept silent, it activated Isaiah 53 as a prophecy towards Yeshua, but also it transferred the sin of the two false witnesses, which were Israelites, into Yeshua, and Yeshua carried the sin of Israel on their behalf. Did that make sense to you? That's how it was a transference of the sin from one to the other. Because there was two witnesses, like there were two priests. Can you still hear me? Okay, can you still hear me? Okay, so now the first part of the verse in chapter 26 is about the suffering servant. He kept silent. Okay? Now watch what it says, the rest of the verses. If you can post verse 26 of Matthew 26, verse 63 to 64. Okay, can somebody post that? 63 to 64. I'll do it until somebody comes in. Okay. Here we go. It says, whoops. But Yeshua held his peace, and the priest answers unto him, I adjured you by the living Elohim that thou tell us whether you are Mashiach, the son of Elohim. Now the question is directly, and here he had to answer. Okay, what did he say? Listen to the words. This is the key, guys. Yeshua said unto him, thou hast said, nevertheless I say to you, hereafter shall you see the Son of Man, Ben Adam, very important, sitting on the right hand of the power, coming in the clouds of heaven. He just described to you the second coming of Messiah, in a white horse. See, so Yeshua is dying as a suffering servant, and then he will come back riding in the clouds at the right hand of power, in other words, the right hand of Yahweh, because that's really what he said. Because how else would you rend your garments for that statement without the word Yahweh there? No, when he quoted that verse, he is basically giving you reference to Daniel 7:13. And also to Daniel, which it talks about the Son of Man, the one sitting, the one with the two thrones. See, the Son of Man and the Ancient of Days. And that's the reference he's given to you. Now, let's go back to the book of Revelation. In the book of Revelation, it tells us in book chapter 1, verse 17, chapter 1, verse 17, says this. I hope you're all enjoying this. I'm doing my best to be as clear as I can. In Revelation chapter 1 verse 7 says this, behold, he is coming with the clouds, and every eye will see him, including those who pierce him. Question, What reference on the Tanakh is that from? Isn't that from Zechariah? Isn't that from Zechariah? That he's sending you that from? He's giving you a reference to Zechariah in that verse. And then the second part of the verse says, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn for him, even so, amen. But the first part of the verse says, behold, he is coming with the clouds. That is a reference to what? Daniel 7:13, which is talking about Messiah as the king. So this is the problem that we see in the New Testament. Every Christian that I know, they look at the New Testament as one long time lapse. They look at the book of John and the book of Revelation as the same time for the same time period. They look at the letters and all that's exactly the Greek chronology. When in fact, the book of Revelation is not for the first century or the second century. It's actually for the end of time. Okay? So let me show you how the book of Revelation presents Yeshua. In Revelation chapter 7, can somebody post this? Revelation chapter 1, verse 8. In Revelation chapter 1, verse 8. If somebody can post it for me, I really would appreciate it. I don't have it in my PowerPoint. In the book of Revelation chapter 1, verse 7 and 8, it's presenting Yeshua in a different role. Okay? It says, I am the Aleph and the Tav, the beginning and the ending, says Adonai, which is, which was, and which is to come, El Shaddai. Wait a minute. Do you see the word Yeshua there? Do you see the word Yeshua there? What does the word Yeshua mean? Salvation. Right? So therefore, do you agree that the name Yeshua is the name of his role that he came to do as the prophet, as the Savior, as the Redeemer? But in the book of Revelation, all of a sudden, during the second coming, or the time frame of the end of times, now he's going to be given a different title. The one that was, the one that is, the one that is to come, El Shaddai, Adonai, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the ending. So, wait a second. How come Yeshua is not those things right now? Or is he those things right now, but his role has not really allowed him to execute the office of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords on the earth yet? That's the question. And this is why this is creating a lot of controversy within Messianic understanding, because they believe that Yeshua, a lot of Messianics and Christians, they believe that Yeshua should be worshipped right now, when in fact the Father is the only one who gets the worship and the honor, because Yeshua is doing the role of the high priest, of the Kohen HaGadol. Again, not because he doesn't deserve it, but because he is setting himself apart so that he can intercede in your behalf, so he can do the work of the intercessor, of the high priest, so you can have access to the throne of glory of Yahweh. Are you guys understanding me? So are you with me? Are you following me? This is very important. Only the word of Yeshua, everybody else, I'm sure will. Okay, so therefore, let's continue this. Let's keep going and find out what was the role of Messiah when he first came. We already proved through the words of Yeshua in Matthew 26 that he gave you an illusion that when he first came, he didn't come as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He says, surely you say you'll see him in the clouds. In other words, you'll see me coming in the clouds in the second coming. But watch this. In Isaiah chapter 61 verse 1. Says this, the Spirit of Adonai Elohim is upon me, because Yahweh has anointed me to preach the good tidings unto the meek. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prisons to them that are bound. Right? To proclaim the acceptable year of Yahweh. Now, how come Yeshua didn't continue the verse 2? You see, every Christian reads this, and they don't even know what it means. Oh, that's preaching to the gospel. You see, Jesus came to preach the gospel. I got news for you. The context of Isaiah, when he wrote this prophecy, the audience that he was talking to was not the Gentiles, guys. The Gentiles were not in covenant. The audience that he is talking to is better. It's the dispersed of Israel. The target audience that he's talking to is the dispersed of Israel, not the Gentiles. So now, let me show you something really interesting. When Yeshua came in the synagogue in Luke chapter 4, verse 18, he read Isaiah 61, verse 1, and he stopped after half of verse 2. Why did he do that? Let me show you something that you may not know. How many of you have heard of the Qumran Scrolls? Qumran Scrolls. How many of you have heard of those? Okay. How many of you here have read the rolls of Melchizedek in the Qumran Scrolls? How many of you do not even know what I'm talking about? The roll of Melchizedek in the Qumran Scrolls. Now, did you know that in there they quote Isaiah 61 verse 1 and verse 2? But they did something very significant. When they quoted Isaiah 61, verse 1 and verse 2, they did this. They said, to proclaim the acceptable year of Melchizedek. In other words, the Qumran community, which existed a few years before Yeshua and after Yeshua died, they believed that Mashiach would come as the Messiah of David or the Messiah of Aaron. In other words, they believed that the Messiah will be a king or a priest. Now, do you think it's a coinkydinky that Yeshua is reading exactly this verse in the synagogue when he's doing an aliyah of the Haftorah, and all of a sudden he stops in the first half of verse 2, and he says, today it has been fulfilled in your hearing? And everybody in the first century was expecting the Messiah. And all of a sudden he's reading a part and connecting it with the understanding of the sons of Zadok that lived in the Qumran community, because those who are the people that were living there, the sons of Zadok, they were the ones in the Qumran community. They were the high priests and the priests who would not take the money from Rome, and they got away from Israel, from Jerusalem, and went to the mountains to keep themselves pure, to become an Adam Mikdash, to become a living tabernacle, a human tabernacle, to get prepared for the coming of Mashiach. Do you believe the people did not understand these principles in which they knew about the Melchizedek scroll, the teachings that they were having in that time? And Yeshua is connecting himself to Melchizedek, connecting himself with the anointed one from Yahweh. That's why they didn't like him very much. Let's continue. In John chapter 7, verse 20 to verse 22, Yeshua continues to tell us about his role. But if we don't understand the roles of Messiah in his first and the role of Messiah in the second coming, and the teaching about Messiah ben Joseph and Messiah ben David, we're never going to see the words of Yeshua in his proper context. And now we are going to be preaching or teaching a Jesus that even our Jewish brothers don't recognize. And this is something that has been predetermined from Scripture, guys. It happened in the story of Joseph. But who came in the picture so that Joseph can see that Judah no longer hated? It was Benjamin. Prophetically, Benjamin has to come in the picture. And I believe we are doing the prophetic role of Benjamin, but we are messing up our calling because we are arguing about petty stuff instead of focusing on how to help our Christian brothers and our Jewish brothers understand where we're coming from, that this is all prophetic plan of restoration of the 12 tribes of Israel. There we go. So now, what does Luke 7 says? How come this is not giving me my own? I'm restricting my own text, how much I can put up. It's my own room. I can do whatever I want. Thank you. It says, when the men were come unto him, they said, Yohanan the Immerser has sent us unto you, saying, are thou he that should come, or shall we look for another? I mean, wait a minute, guys. Yeshua, that was his cousin. How come he said, yeah, Yeshua, what's up, man? Are you the one or what's up? He didn't say that. He asked him a particular question. What is really intriguing is how he answered. See, in Luke chapter 7, verse 21 says, and at the same hour he cured many other iniquities and plagues and evil spirits, and unto many that were blind he gave sight. Verse 22 says, then Yeshua answering said unto them, go your way and tell John what things you have seen and heard, How that the blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and to the poor the gospel is preached. Now, what references is he giving you? Is he giving you the reference of Messiah ben Joseph or Messiah ben David? Okay? And it says, Messiah ben Joseph. How did he answer? He answered with Isaiah 35. In Isaiah 35, that's where John the Baptist died. It says in Isaiah 35, says, then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame men leap as a harp, and the tongue of the dumb sing. And for the witnesses, you know, for the wilderness shall the water breaks out, the streams in the desert. Interesting. So why did Yeshua answer with a verse and with actions of healing? Because the role of the Messiah ben Joseph was to do what? To restore the 12 tribes of Israel who were brokenhearted, who were captives, who were dispersed, the 10 tribes of Israel. It's interesting. I'm going to read you now commentaries from the rabbis so you see what they say about this. Listen to this. It says this. The first of these is called the Messiah ben Joseph, and the other Messiah ben David. According to tradition, Messiah ben Joseph is a tzaddik, who according to some sources is destined to suffer and die for his people. Despite that some claim today, the suffering servant found in the chapters of Isaiah is considered in ancient Jewish commentaries to be Messiah ben Joseph, as well as representing Israel. It's dual, represents Israel and Messiah ben Joseph. While everybody argues that it's about Israel only, and everybody argues that it's about Yeshua only, I submit to you it's about both. But anyway, listen to what Rabbi Ginsburg states. This is very significant. Rabbi Yitzhak Ginsburg states, prior to the establishment of the kingdom of God, Messiah ben Joseph, quote, will rectify certain aspects of reality in preparation for the advent of Messiah ben David. Now, what do you think he's trying to rectify? Restore the lost tribes of Israel? Could that be one possibility? There are 10 coins. There are 10 lepers. Let me see what else. There are 10 virgins. There's a Samaritan woman. There's a blind guy in Bethsaida, the house of fish, in Aramaic. I mean, what else do we need to know, guys? Hello? I mean, every miracle of Yeshua was as a sign to teach them the role of Yeshua in regards to the restoration of the 10 tribes of Israel, because Yeshua, as Ben David, as the king of David, cannot come back until the 10 tribes are restored. If Yeshua is the Messiah, then he has to restore the 10 tribes. This is why we are coming back to the Torah. This is even though we've been raised in Christianity, we have renounced all the Babylonian practices, and we're coming back to the Torah and submit to Yahweh's words. Why? Because this is the sign that Yeshua is the true Messiah. Why would all these people come out of Christianity and follow Torah, which even the rabbis don't know what to do with us? They can't understand why in the world. Because he promised it. Isn't the story of Joseph, guys? 10 brothers came to Egypt. 10. There were 12. One is in Egypt in the dispersion. The other one stayed behind. 10 brothers came down to Egypt. Mitzrayim, desolation. Why? To gather bread. Because there's famine in the land. So therefore, that's the only way, and that's what the Great Tribulation is for. So here we have Rabbi Ginsburg, and I don't know the year, but Rabbi Ginsburg quotes that. Let me give you a Talmudic times. I'm going to give you a whole bunch of Talmudic commentaries so you see that they're well aware of these teachings, but we don't have these because everybody in there says, oh no, that's too Jewish. We don't want to do that because, you know, they don't know Yeshua, so therefore, they're just all wrong. I got news for you. Not all the rabbinical writings are wrong. Now, do I follow rabbinical oral law as a way of life? Absolutely not. I don't follow rabbinical oral law as a standard of my life. Torah is a standard of my life, and I've been able to do that by Yeshua the Messiah. Do I learn from the rabbis? Absolutely. Absolutely do. Learn from them. So we got to stop being a little too hard on my Jewish brothers and learn from them. And this is the problem that we have with Ephraim, guys. Let me give you a little problem that we're having here. Now, what is the trait in Ephraim's attitude? Let me tell you prophetically what has happened. Ephraim, from the whole time in the Bible, he wants to do whatever he wants to do. He wants to establish their own feasts, like Jeroboam changed it from the 7th to the 8th. They want to establish their own priesthood. They want to worship the way they want, mixing the holy and the profane. Brother, let me tell you this. If you're an Ephraimite and you're in the room, you are part of Israel. We love you. We are one in Messiah. Absolutely. But don't make the mistake your brothers made. We forget that my Jewish brothers have been dying to protect a lot of our identity for the last 2,000 years. We forget that. And we're very arrogant sometimes because we have Yeshua and we think we have it all figured out. And we are completely disregarding our Jewish brothers. And guess what? Baruch haba b'shem Adonai. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. And every knee will bow. Guess what? Even the Jews that don't believe right now, when Messiah comes, they will bow down. Because it's going to be very self-evident. So you got to be very careful not to do exactly what Ephraim did. Now let's see what the Talmud says in regards to this. The Talmud in Sanhedrin says this, in Rabbi Joshua posts two verses. It is written, "And behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven." Where elsewhere is written, "Behold, thy king cometh unto you lowly." Let me put it up for you. "And riding upon a donkey." After much discussion of these seeming contradictory passages, the rabbis concluded, quote, "If they," Israel, "are worthy," that's really what it means, "he will come with the cloud of heaven. If not, lowly and riding upon a donkey." Got a question for you. When Yeshua came in the city, did he come on a horse or did he come on a donkey? You hear the anti-missionaries hammer the Christians because of Isaiah 53, but do the Christians rebutter them by talking about the role of Messiah, which is all over the Brit Hadashah? It's all over. They don't know it. They don't know it because of lack of understanding, because in Christianity, they're teaching King of Kings and Lord of Lords right now, when in fact, Yeshua is not the King of Kings and Lord of Lords right now. He is King in waiting. Just like David, he was a King in waiting. He didn't receive his throne right away. He had to wait. Let me give you another one. Another quote of the rabbis here is very interesting. Watch this. It says, "One of the most detailed and powerful descriptions of the role of Mashiach ben Joseph is found in the Zohar." And it's in the Zohar, okay? So don't be writing me emails telling me, "Oh my God, I can't believe you read Zohar." Let me give you a piece of information for some of you that maybe are judgmental by not understanding some of his writings. I have found more information about the ancient writings of the Zohar about Yeshua being the Messiah, not that they say he is Messiah, but that they prove, line up exactly with what the Brit Hadashah says, than any other writings up there. It's incredible the stuff they said. I'm going to give you one of them. Am I a Kabbalist? Absolutely not. Do I tell you to study Kabbalah? Absolutely not. But do the ancient writings about Messiah have some merit in comparison as evidence that lines up with the role of the Messiah? Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with that. We do it all the time. Quote, "When Messiah," listen to this, "when Messiah hears of the great suffering of Israel in their dispersion and of the wicked among them who seek not to know their master, he weeps aloud on account of these wicked ones among them, as it is written." Watch this. Let me keep going. I want to take my time with this one. I really like this one. And it says, quote, now they're going to give you a quote of the Torah. And it says, of the prophets, it says, "But he was wounded because of our transgressions. He was crushed because of our iniquities." The Messiah, on his part, enters a certain hall in the Garden of Eden, called the Garden of the Afflicted. Let me ask you guys a question. If in fact the anti-missionaries are saying that Isaiah 53 is all about Israel, Then how come the rabbis in the Zohar are using Isaiah 53 and connect it with the Messiah? Huh. Do you think that's a valid question? I mean, you go into some of these rooms and they go, oh, they argue with you and telling you that you're stupid, that you don't know the Hebrew, that you don't know anything, and they're quoting you, telling you, oh no, that's about Israel, that's not about Mashiach. And all of a sudden now in the Zohar, you find what it says, when Messiah hears of the great suffering of Israel and the dispersion, and of the wicked among them who seeks not to follow the Master, he weeps aloud, the Messiah weeps aloud on account of those wicked ones among them, as it is written, because he was wounded because of our transgression. He was crushed because of our iniquities. End quote. And then continues and says, the Messiah, in, on his part, enters a certain hole in the Garden of Eden called the Hole of the Afflicted. What else? He says, there he calls for all the diseases and pains and sufferings of Israel, bidding them to settle on himself, which they do. And were not that he thus eases the burden of, from Israel, taking it on himself, no one could endure the suffering meted out to Israel in expiation on account of their neglect. Let me give you the rest of the commentary. Of the neglect of the Torah. The neglect of the Torah. So scripture says, surely our diseases he did bear. Wait a minute. He is there quoting Isaiah 53 again. End quote. As long as Israel were in the Holy Land by means of the temple service and sacrifices, they averted all the evil diseases and afflictions from the world. Now it is the Messiah who is the means of averting them from mankind into the time when a man quits this world and receives his punishment. Guys, do you agree with that statement from the Zohar about their Messiah? And does that sound exactly what you and I teach about the role of Yeshua? Come on now, help me out. Because some of you get all the time in the, that's exactly what we believe. So how is it that even in their Zohar, even the Midrash Rabbah, even in the Talmud, they have stuff like this, and they're quoting Isaiah 53 in reference to this Messiah who's going to take the afflictions and the sins of Israel upon himself? But then when we tell them, no, we're crazy, but even they're arguing with their own writings. It makes no sense. Let me give you another one. According to the Messiah text, and Pilgrim is here, so I want to do my best to give you all the references, because he made a good point 4 years ago. He told me, Rico, people want to learn, and people want to know the references where you get them from. And I agree with him 100%, and I take a lot of time to make sure that you get references to know where it's coming from, because I want you to look it up for yourself. I want you to not believe anything that I say. Look it up. The Messiah text, Raphael Patai. I got that book. You got to get it. Now, these are the titles of the Messiah. I want you to pay close attention. Watch this. These are the titles. There's only five of a whole bunch that I got here. Messiah ben Joseph, Messiah ben David, Messiah ben Ephraim, the leper's Messiah, the head of days, the son of man. Wait a minute. Didn't Yeshua call himself the son of man? Ben Adam? There's more. Tzemach, Menachem, Nechora, Shalom, Sadiq, Adonai. Wait a minute. Adonai is one of the titles of Mashiach. Yinon, let me give you the other ones. Yinon, Sidkenu. Hold on. I want to make your head explode tonight. It says, Yinon, Sidkenu, Pele, Yoetz, El. The word El. It's there, Givor. Avi Ashalom, Fragrance, David and Shiloh. Okay? Are you guys getting something out of this today? It's very important. Very important. Now, watch this. This is what Raphael Patai says about the roles of Messiah. Now, he doesn't believe Yeshua is the Messiah, but let me tell you what he says. He says, the eminent scholar Raphael Patai, who taught Hebrew at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem and served as professor of anthropology in Drop City University, says of the two Messiah theory. I'm going to quote it here for you. It says, when the death of Mashiach or Messiah became an imminent, watch this, listen to what he says. He says, when the death of the Messiah became an established tenet in Talmudic times. So they understood about Messiah dying. He said, this was left to be irreconcilable with the belief that Messiah as Redeemer, in the Messiah's Redeemer, who will usher the bliss, usher in the blissful millennium of the Messianic age. The dilemma was solved by splitting the person of the Messiah in two. One of them called Messiah ben Joseph, and the other one called Messiah ben David. Okay, and I'm going to keep reading this, so hold on. I want you to read it. I want you to be there with me. It says, was to raise the armies of Israel against their enemies, and many victories and miracles will fall victim to Gog Magog. The other, Messiah ben David, will come after him, and in some legend to bring back to life, which psychologically hints to the identity of the two, and will lead Israel to the ultimate victory, the triumph, and the messianic bliss. So you understand that even in rabbinical circles, they believe that one of the Messiah ben Joseph, would actually come and die, and then Ben David will come and actually resurrect Ben Joseph, and he will bring in the Messianic age. So they do have the concept of a Messiah coming and dying and being resurrected, right? Alright, they just can't reconcile how in the world can be one person doing both roles. Yeshua told us that he was doing both roles, but if we don't understand these principles in the words of Yeshua, we're never going to see the true message behind it. And then we're going to confuse the roles of Messiah, which in turn is going to do what? Is going to turn away my Jewish brothers from Yeshua, because they are not going to accept a Messiah who has not restored the 12 tribes. By the way, I got a question to ask you. Let's forget that Yeshua is Messiah for one second. Would you agree with me just for one second, for the sake of the argument? Let's put Yeshua on a separate room here. We know he is Mashiach, but for the sake of the argument, forget that he's Messiah. And let's pretend that this whole room is Orthodox Jews. Okay? Let's pretend this whole room is Orthodox Jews. I don't know if you know, but the Orthodox, we pray, I mean, I'm not Orthodox, but we do this, the Amidah. We do the 18 benedictions. They're actually 19, but we only pray 18. So therefore, one of them is Kibbutz Galiot, which is the regathering of the exiles. Am I right or am I wrong? The regathering of the exiles is one of the most important prayers of the Amidah, the standing prayers. Every day, three times a day, they pray, every Jew all over the world, we do that prayer. Kibbutz Galiot. Sound the shofar and we go from there. Forget that Yeshua is Messiah for 1 minute. I ask this question to a Hasidic friend of mine who's a Levi in Jerusalem. I asked him this question. I said, do you pray the Kibbutz Galiot, the regathering of the exiles? He goes, Nachum, yes, can. And I said, do you believe that the regathering of the exiles will be brought back? And he goes, yes. I said, well, how can that happen when according to Jeremiah 3:8, the 10 tribes of Israel were cut off because of their idolatry? And then I went on and I told him, I said, do you know what Yeshua said in the Brit Hadashah? He never read it, so he don't know. I asked him, I said, he says, listen to what I said to him. I said, Yeshua said, I did not come except to the last sheep of the house of Israel. That's all I said to him. He looked at me and he said, Rico, you mean to tell me that Yeshua, that's what he calls it, that Yeshua actually came for the 10 tribes of Israel? And I says, yes. And I basically got up and left. I left him with that one. I'll see him next year, and then he'll tell me what he thinks about it. Because he says, I never heard that before. Now, truth in Ken, the problem is that Orthodox Jews, they said that they were not actually divorced, because the Jews, Judah, was not divorced. Judah was not divorced, even though they committed idolatry, and they were not divorced for the sake of David. So the Jews is actually correct. He never divorced Judah. Okay? He can never divorce Judah, because he made a promise to David that he will forever have a tribe in Jewish line. Okay? But he divorced Israel. Okay? The 10 tribes, that's why they were scattered. Jeremiah 3:10, and all those places. Okay, that's okay. It's no big deal. You don't have to agree with me. It's cool. But this is what Romans, that's what Romans chapter 7, verse 1 through 6 is talking about, brother. That's what Romans was talking about. And Yeshua said, I did not come except to the last sheep of the house of Israel. If Yeshua didn't come, you know, who do you think he came for? For Judah? Judah was still in covenant. They need reconciliation. They need Messiah. But they need reconciliation. You see what I mean? The 10 tribes of Israel, they need to be restored back in the covenant because they were cut off because of idolatry. All right, let's continue. So I was reading you, let me read you this this quote from the Talmud now. The Talmud, Sukkah 52a, is talking about the role of Ben Yosef and Ben David. It says, what is the cause of mourning mentioned the last side of verse? It says, a commentary on Zechariah 12:10. They shall look upon me whom they pierce. Remember that. Rabbi Dosa and the rabbis differ on the point. One explained, the cause is the slaying of Messiah ben Joseph. And the other explained, the cause is the slaying of the evil inclination. Well, that's a good question. They're arguing, what is this verse about? About the Yater Hara or Messiah ben Joseph? That's the argument they're having. It is well according to him who explains that the cause is the slaying of Messiah ben Joseph. Since that word agrees with the scripture verse, and they shall look upon me because they have trusted him through, and they shall mourn for him as one mourns for his only son. Isn't that exactly the reference that John in the book of Revelation quotes in John 1:7? He will come in the clouds and they shall look upon him whom they pierce. Isn't that exactly the reference that John, the apostle John, gives when Yeshua is dying on the tree? So why is he making the connection to Zechariah? Ah, I know why. Because in Zechariah, when it says, and they shall look upon me, the word me is not in the Hebrew, is the Aleph Tav that is not translated. They shall look upon the Aleph Tav whom they pierce. Many Jews will tell you, oh no, that's the pointer to a direct object. Yeah, it's not translated. It's basically saying that the action of the trusting through is to the Aleph and the Tav. Who is the me that they translated to there? Now, let me continue this thing because it gets interesting. I hope you enjoy yourself tonight. I am. It's my first time in a long time. I hope you enjoy it. I like to bring something to the table when I teach. And you don't have to agree with me. It's okay. It's not about agreeing, guys. It's about just listening, studying it, verifying it. And we all grow. You know, we all grow. And I'll tell you what. If I say something today that I'm wrong, I'll come back and I'll tell you I did it wrong. This is where we're at right now. We're learning as we go. You know what I mean? All right, it says this, but according, man, I can't even post whatever I want. That's not cool. I got to learn how to use this thing. Here we go. Let me read it. It says, but according to him who explains the cause to be the slain of the evil inclination, is this an occasion for mourning? It is not rather an occasion for rejoicing? He goes, why then should they weep? This is what the rabbis are saying. This is a very incredible commentary, by the way. It says, why then should they weep? The explanation is, as Rabbi Judah expounded, is the time, in the time to come, the Holy One, blessed be He, will bring the evil inclination and slay it in the presence of the righteous and the wicked. Okay? It's the hard returns that fail. That's true. All right. Let me give you another one. Did you know, let me ask you this question. Some of you just came in a little later. We have been trying to establish the role of Messiah. Did you know about the rabbinical teaching about the priest of war and the priest of Messiah and the war Messiah? How many of you know about that? This is very important because Yeshua is doing the role of what? Let's review real quick. Is Yeshua king right now? No. So he's doing the role of priest, right? But wait a minute. High priest of what? The temple or war? The heavenly tabernacle, right? Melchizedek. Good. All right. So we got that straightened out. Let's prove it now through rabbinical writings. Watch this. In Deuteronomy chapter 25, 20, verse 1 and 3. Deuteronomy chapter 20, verse 1 and 3, it mentions Pinchas as the first priest of war. It says, when thou goest out to battle against thy enemies, and seest horses and chariots, and a people more than thou, be not afraid of them, for Yahweh Elohim is with you, which has brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And it says, and it shall be, when you are nigh unto battle, that the priest shall approach and speak unto the people, and shall say unto them, hear Israel, you approach this day unto battle against your enemies. Let not your heart faint. Fear not, do not tremble, neither you be terrified because of them. So therefore, I don't have the verse that I needed here. Where the heck is it? So what about Pinchas being the high priest? I think I raised it by accident. So he talks about Pinchas being the high priest of war here in Deuteronomy. So I misquoted it. Now this is really interesting because you see, the first priest anointed for war is actually found in some of the rabbinical writings. Okay? The first priest anointed for war that we find mentioned of Pinchas, the grandson of Aaron, in the Midrash Rabbah says this. Let me quote it for you. You can see it. In the Midrash Rabbah says this, Elisheva, the daughter of Aminabad, Dab, did not enjoy happiness in the world. True, she witnessed 5 crowns attained by her relatives. In one day, her brother-in-law was a king. Her brother was a prince. Her husband was a high priest. Her 2 sons were both deputy high priests. Pinchas, her grandson, was a priest anointed for war. So now you have the role of the high priest. And this is where Yeshua is going to be identified completely different than anything else for the rest of the story. The high priest of war and the high priest of the temple. Ah, now we're getting somewhere. I hope you're getting excited like me. Maybe not yet, but hopefully later. We're going to explain some of the stuff here. Oh, I love the Torah. Ma haftito atecha. I tell you, I love the Torah of Yahweh. Says the Talmud says, thus it states, and Moses sent them 1,000 of every tribe to the war, them and Pinchas. Them refers to Sanhedrin. Pinchas was the priest anointed for battle. I'm showing you these so you will see that even in their writings they understand that they have a concept of a priest of war and the priest of the temple. And did you know that the whole New Testament, Brit Hadashah, is basically structured in those two roles? Yeshua in his first coming was doing, this is beautiful, in his first coming he was doing the role of the priest. I gotta write it down, I got all excited. Priest of the temple. But when he comes in the clouds, before he becomes the king on the earth, he will be doing the role of what? The priest of war. And you see that in the book of Isaiah, the book of Zechariah, and the book of Revelation. There's no contradiction in the whole Brit Hadashah. Now I finally got that verse in Numbers chapter 31, verse 5 and 6, which explains that Pinchas was the priest of war. Listen to this. And it says this. So they were delivered out of the thousands of Israel, 1,000 of every tribe, 12,000 armed for war. And Moses sent them to the war, and 1,000 of every tribe, them and Pinchas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, to the war, with his holy garments and the trumpet to blow in his hands. Listen to that. That is the second coming of Messiah, guys. That is exactly the second coming of Messiah. There are 12,000 of each tribe, except for Dan and except for Ephraim. By the way, there's not going to be, out of the 144,000, there's not going to be any of them from the tribe of Ephraim. So if you're an Ephraimite, guess what? You're not one of the 144,000. That's not to diminish your role in the end times. That's just the way it is. That's what it says. Are you guys following me? Are you with me? I'm going to show you. Say yes. Put a one in there. One or two people. Make me feel good. Come on, pump me up. It's been a while for me. So therefore, now let's look. What did Yeshua tell us? What did he tell us in... Oh, I just love the Torah, man. I love the Torah. Do you realize that of all the peoples of the earth, let me put it this way, and this is how I feel lately. I'm a little Puerto Rican Jew guy. You know, I was born in Puerto Rico, raised in the States, but, you know, I'm Jewish in background. I found out I'm Jewish 11 years ago. I came back to my people. You know, I came back. It makes sense. Finally know who I am. You know, I finally understand who I am. I'm, you know, I'm made complete. You know, I walk like a Hebrew. I speak like a Hebrew. I'm not a Christian. You know, I mean, I don't hold the theology of Christianity. And all of a sudden, now, this year alone, this is where I'm going. Yahweh's taking me there. Going to Poland. I'm going to Belgium. I'm going to Holland. I'm going to Dominican Republic, hopefully. I'll be going to Puerto Rico, I'm going to Mexico, and I'm going to South Africa, all within the next 5 months. Now, imagine this. The creator of the universe, guys, every single one of you in this room, the creator of the universe is giving you an opportunity to know things that has been hidden for years. Not because I'm teaching them. Every single one of you have gotten revelation, because if you didn't, you wouldn't be here tonight. The problem that it tests our hearts, and it cuts through our hearts, and it circumcises our hearts. See, that's why I pray for the Father to circumcise my heart every night. That I just want to be a servant. I don't care about fame or titles. I just want to be a servant. I want to share Torah. And I want people to just see Yahweh and come back to His Torah, so they will understand the role of our Messiah. So therefore we can walk in confidence to know that Yeshua is the only true Messiah of Israel, and that He always directed our attention to the Father. Okay, watch this. What did Yeshua tell us about His role on Pesach? And I hope that when I post these verses, you probably asked the question when you first read them, what does that mean? Watch this. It says, then He took the cup, gave thanks, and gave it to them, saying, all of you drink it, for this is My blood of the new covenant, which is poured out for many for the remission of sins. Now, verse 29 is the key. Verse 29 says, but I tell you that I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it anew with you in My Father's kingdom. Question! Why did He say those words? Oh, because He's going to die, He's going to go to heaven, and He's going to be in the temple. No! He said that for a specific reason. The answer is found in Leviticus chapter 10, verse 8 and 9. What is the role of Messiah? Exactly. The high priest cannot drink wine when he goes into the holy place. Do not drink wine or strong drink. You know your sons with you when you go into the tent of meeting, that you don't die. If Yeshua is the high priest, even though He's in the order of Melchizedek, guess what? He cannot break the commandments that He established on Mount Sinai. So therefore, He will not drink of that wine until He comes back. Why? Because when He comes back to the earth, He's not going to be doing the Yom Kippur. Because there's not going to be Yom Kippur in the millennial reign. There's only going to be reconciliation sacrifices. So therefore, Yeshua, you don't see Him officiating in Yom Kippur in the millennial reign, because there's no Yom Kippur that's been done away with, because that's what's forgiveness for all of Israel. So the question is, why did Yeshua die on Pesach instead of dying on Yom Kippur? Because Passover is for the individual sin, for individual redemption. And Yom Kippur is for the whole congregation of Israel. That's why He's coming on Yom Kippur. Amen? All right, let me continue. So that's why He's not drinking. Now, elsewhere in the Midrash Rabbah, we find references to the same person. Remember, the priest of war and the priest of the temple. He's called the war Messiah. What is interesting here is the footnote, which links the high priest, the priest anointed for war, to the coming Messiah. See, this is especially significant regarding Yeshua, guys, as the first time He came as the temple priest, in order to fulfill all the requirements for Yom Kippur in the future. It says, whereas He will return the second time as the war Messiah to smite His enemies, as Isaiah 59:17 tells us that He will do. That's why He's coming. Remember that when you scroll up on the text and it tells you the verse on Numbers about Pinchas. Let me reread it again. Let me scroll up and you see. Here we go. And Moses sent... Don't put it at the end of the screen so I can read it. Says, and Moses sent to the war. There you go. Forget it. You guys keep scrolling stuff. Hold on. It says, and Moses sent to the war 1,000 of every tribe. Then and Pinchas, the son of Eleazar, the priest of war, with the holy instruments and the trumpet to blow in his hand. Now, is there going to be a trumpet being blown when Messiah comes? Absolutely. Now, Isaiah 59, verse 15 to 17. Can we post those? I'll promise you I'll be done. I only have six more slides. That's it. Are you finding this teaching edifying tonight? Explaining the role of Messiah. Now, this is why I can believe Yeshua is more than a man. That Yeshua is pre-existent, but not find myself in idolatry. Because Yeshua never says to worship him, even though he does deserve the honor and the praise, and he deserves all those things. Remember the story of Joseph, right? Who gave Joseph authority? Didn't Pharaoh said, you have the ring, you have the scepter, you have all the kingdom, except for my throne. In other words, Joseph was second in command. Joseph was never first in command. And I'm going to make a comment here, and I hope you understand where I'm coming from. Guys, Yeshua is only going to be king only of the earth. Because the Father is the king of everything else in the universe. Yeshua comes from the Father. He's the image of the invisible Elohim. He is the Memah. He's the Word. He's the vessel that Yahweh used, the Father, to create all things. But the Father is the he's over everything. Just like Pharaoh was over his throne, and Joseph was second in command, Yeshua was always going to be at the right hand of the Father. But when it comes to the 1,000-year reign of Messiah, because he's going to dwell for 1,000 years with the bride, he's going to be king on the earth. After that, I don't know, so don't ask me after the millennial reign. Can somebody post Isaiah 59, 15, 17, please? I'm sorry, you already did. Apologize. It says, yeah, truth faileth, and he said that departed from evil, maketh himself the prey, and Yahweh saw it, and it displeased him that there was no judgment. Listen to verse 16. And he saw that there was no man, and wondered that there was no intercessor. Therefore, his arm brought salvation. Very significant unto him. And his righteousness is sustained him. Okay? And go to 17 for me, please. And verse 17 says, for he put on righteousness as a breastplate, and a helmet of salvation upon his head, and he put on the garment of vengeance for clothing, and was clad with a seal as a cloth. Now, I got a question for you. Every Christian, when they read these verses about the helmet of salvation and the breastplate of righteousness, they keep thinking about a Roman soldier. My Lord, don't they know that it's about the high priest? Paul is using the concept of the high priest to teach these people about Messiah's role, and the Christians say it's a Roman soldier. My Father. And it's in Isaiah. He's not using anything different. Something that was already established. Now, you're going to like this one. Let me move on. The following section of the Talmud shows distinction between the deputy temple high priest and the high priest anointed for war. And with the former taking precedence regarding issues of defilement, but the latter, the priest of the war, being considered more important. If one had to choose between the two of them, as he has the responsibility of many people. Now let me explain this so you know where I'm coming from. I'm going to quote it. Slowly we're going to read it. Okay? And then I'm going to, because this is the whole premise why I did this teaching, because of this one quote that I read from the Talmud, okay? This whole quote in the Talmud made me understand exactly what I've been reading in the Brit Hadashah the whole time. I can never put it together. Why is it that Messiah is not found in the millennial reign as we think? It doesn't say Yeshua. It doesn't say Messiah. It says the Prince. But I noticed there was not Yom Kippur, so I'm thinking, what is going on? You know, I don't quite understand this whole problem in the book of Ezekiel. I know the temple will be restored. I know that the sacrifices will be restored. All Christians have issues with that. I don't. I finally understand. It makes perfect sense. So watch this. Let's read it slowly. In the Talmud, it says, the question was propounded as between the high priest anointed for war and the deputy high priest. When you see the deputy priest, it's the high priest of the temple. Okay? Which is of superior sanctity? That's the question. Does the high priest anointed for war take precedence because he is qualified to go to war? Or does the deputy, the high priest of the temple, take precedence because he is qualified to perform the temple service? Now you see that asterisk right there? Pay attention to that. See, I'm going to quote. I'm going to put you what they understand the asterisk means. Watch this. This is very significant. Because this is not the whole quote, but I'm going to put it in there. Please don't write anything right now until I finish here. Thank you. See, it says, but once a priest have been anointed for war, he could no longer take precedence of the temple service. In other words, why is it that once the temple priests, I'm sorry, why is it that the priests who have been anointed for war, when once he's been anointed as the priest of war, he could no longer take part in the temple service? Because he's been defiled. Let me continue with the quote now. I'm going to continue with the quote. And this is very significant in regards to Yeshua. And that's how we explain it in the book of Ezekiel. That's why we don't see him in the millennial reign. Watch this. This is the second part of the Talmud quote. It says, come in here, for it has been taught. The only difference between a high priest anointed for war and a deputy high priest of the temple is that if they both walking by the way and they counted a met mitzvah, the high priest anointed for war is to defile himself, but not the deputy high priest, the temple priest. Let me continue. Hold on. I got to take it really easy on this one because I want you guys to get this. All right. And it says, but it has not been taught. A high priest anointed for war takes precedence of a deputy? Marshal Thra replied, listen to this. As far as saving his life is concerned, the high priest anointed for war has a superior claim, for many people depend upon him. But as regard to defilement, the deputy high priest of the temple is of superior sanctity. Okay? Now, this is very significant. Because now it continues, the last part of the context here says, it has been taught. Rabbi Hanina ben Antigonus said that the reason the office of the deputy high priest was created was that should any disqualification happen to him, the high priest can enter and minister in his stead. Now, let me give you let's take it back a little bit to the time of Yeshua. Remember that they're saying there are two high priests. Now, Caiaphas is talking to Yeshua and asks Yeshua, are you the Messiah or what? Yeshua answers, surely you have said, you see him riding on the clouds in the power of heaven, the power and the powers. And then he says, what is there else for us to say? Blasphemy. And Caiaphas rent his garment. Well, according to the Torah, a high priest is not supposed to rent their garments because that will make that will disqualify them as their high priest. So when Caiaphas was disqualified as the high priest, there is Yeshua, but not of this priesthood of the earth, but as the order of Melchizedek. Now, the interesting is that if John the Baptist was still alive, Yeshua could not be a high priest. Did you know that? If John the Baptist did not die, then Yeshua cannot be a priest, because John the Baptist would have been a kosher priest. So therefore, he would have been there instead. Now, in the book of Revelation, did you guys understand that quote? It's talking about the priest of war and the priest of the temple. Which one is higher sanctity? Okay? So you understand now, right? Yeshua is doing the role of the temple. This is why he told Miriam, touch me not, because I have not gone to the Father. That is Yom Kippur language, guys. That is temple service language. That's what the high priest will tell the priest in the temple, touch me not, because I have not gone to the Father, before he will go on the altar and offer the blood. Now, in Isaiah chapter 63, verse 1 through 6, can you please pose that for me? Thank you. And this is very significant, because I was reading today in one rabbinical book that was saying that one of the roles of Messiah ben Joseph is to wage war against Edom. Against Edom. And listen to what Isaiah 63 says. Who is that cometh from Edom with thy garments from Basra? That is glorious in his apparel, traveling in greatness and his strength. I speak in righteousness, mighty to save. Wherefore art thou red of thine apparel, in thy garments like him that treadeth the wine fat? I have thrown the winepress alone, and of the people that are none with me, for I will thread them with my anger, and trample in my fury, and their blood shall be sprinkled upon my garments, and I will stain all my raiment. Why? because of them. For the day of vengeance is in my heart, and the year of my redeem is come. And I looked, and there was none to help, and I wondered. You see what I mean? So therefore, let's compare that to the book of Revelation now. In the book of Revelation, chapter 19, says this. This is my last text. No, don't go yet. I got like one more quote, and that's it. One more. I'm done. And the book of Revelation says this. And I saw heaven open, and behold, chapter 19, verse 11 through 15. Says, and I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse. There we go. The book of Revelation. When Yeshua first came, he was doing the role of the priest of the temple. When he comes back, he's going to be doing the king and the priest of war. Watch this. And a white horse. And he saw, and he that sat upon him was called faithful and true, and in righteousness he does judge and make war. His eyes was a flame of fire, and on his head was that many crowns, and he had the name written which no man knew for he himself. And he was clothed with a vesture dipped in blood, and his name is called the Memra of Elohim, the Word. And the armies which were in heaven followed him in white horses, clothed in fine linen, white and clothes, and clean. And out of his mouth goeth a sharp sword, and that it would smite the nations, and he shall rule with them with a rod of iron. And he threaded the winepress of the fierceness of the wrath of El Shaddai. Question. When he comes here, is he doing the war Messiah or the temple Messiah? Come on, you tell me. The war Messiah. And according even to the old rabbis, they say that once the war Messiah is defiled because of war, he cannot officiate in the temple, right? That's why we see that when Messiah comes, he's not officiating in the temple in the millennial reign, for the Yom Kippur sacrifice is not going to be any. And because he will shed blood, because he's going to come to redeem us, because we are his bride. Therefore, he is willing to stain his garments because in your behalf. That's what Zechariah is all about, in which the Son of Man is talking to Joshua the priest, which is actually Yeshua the priest, about his stained garments, and he's telling him to take them off. Guys, Yeshua is the true Messiah of Israel. While everybody's arguing about genealogies, whether the genealogies line up or not, whether Yeshua is the Messiah of Isaiah 53 or not, everybody else is disregarding all the overwhelming evidence that the Talmud, the Zohar, the Midrash Rabbah speaks about, exactly what the New Testament is trying to tell us. So who is at fault for not really having a more convincing evidence and more convincing understanding of Scripture? Is it the Orthodox Jews, which have been withheld from a lot of true information by Christianity because they killed the Jews in the name of Jesus for 2,000 years? I got news for you. We have history against us. We have to live the Torah. We have to walk in the Torah in order for them to see that we're following the same Messiah they're expecting. So therefore, Yeshua is the high priest in the order of Melchizedek, because if he was on earth, he could not be a high priest, because only the Levites have been established forever. So remember that broken vow that I spoke about earlier? The broken vow in the book of Numbers, that's when the peace is going to be completed. When the Zadok, the sons of Zadok, is going to be restored in the temple. And that vow is going to be completed. It's going to be restored. Because the temple will be the temple is going to be restored. I hope this teaching has helped you guys to establish the role of the Messiah. I know it's a lot of information. But I tell you what, I have an opportunity to share this with you, and that's why I came to do this. I wasn't going to come teach on Pal Talk too much. I'm traveling so much that I haven't had much time, and I appreciate all of you coming in to listen. You know, again, you don't have to agree with everything we say. Just consider that there's more, okay, than what we've been told. Consider that while everybody's looking to agree with everything, we have to wait out the evidence to make sure that we are not found in idolatry. We want to make sure that you and I, we're not found in idolatry. This is why all my prayers and all of my worship goes to the Father and the Father alone. Why? Because Yeshua told me so. Yeshua told me to pray to the Father in His name. Yeshua never said to pray to Himself. So I am doing exactly what Yeshua said to do. Yeshua says, let them know that we are one, so they can be one just like you and I, we are one. Echad. I don't know what the problem is. The Orthodox refuse to see Yeshua in a Hebraic light. The Christians don't even know what the role of Messiah is. And the Messianics will argue with each other. We don't even know who we believe anymore. I submit to you that things are getting pretty difficult. And instead of all of us trying to think that we have anything figured out, why don't we teshuva? Why don't we repent? Why don't we come together and repent and begin to hear the words of Yahweh and listen and start beginning to hear the Spirit of the Most High so we don't catch ourselves, you know, in problems by not obeying? I want to thank all of you for coming in. And some of you have a question. Thank you, the admins, for helping me out. And I won't be here next Thursday because I'm going to be in New Mexico. From here on, I'm going to be going all over the place. What I'm going to ask is, please, if you take the mic, you got like 2 minutes, and 2-3 minutes tops, and keep it in context to what we talked about. My wife is not feeling very well, and I want to go take care of her, so I want to make sure that I don't want to get into any debates. I want to open it up for another half hour or so and go from here. And go from there. And study this out. If you want the PowerPoint, you can go to my website. And we go from there. Lisha 12, thank you so much for coming in. And we go from there, okay? Joseph, you can come to the mic. You can ask me. All right, come to the mic, Truth.
Yes, brothers and sisters. Can I get a mic check, please? Quick mic check, number one. Great, thanks. I just had a quick question there, Rico. You mentioned that he was coming on the Day of Atonement. I've heard this, and I've heard that he's coming on the Day of, or the Feast of Trumpets. Now, I do know that he says we do not know the day nor the hour that he's coming, and I do know that is a Hebraic idiom in regards to the Feast of Trumpets, that we do know, or do not know, the day nor the hour that that feast begins. Also, he said he's coming at the last trump, which I know that's also a Hebraic idiom regarding the 100 trumps that they do, the, you know, three many sets of three adding up to 99, and the last trump is called the last trump, supposedly. Can you, you know, clarify that for me at all? I thank you very much, brother.
Yes, there are three trumps in the Bible. There's one, the trump, that's for Pentecost. There's the last trump, that is for Yom Teruah, Feast of Trumpets. And there's the last great trump, which is Yom Kippur. Now, what a lot of people don't realize, you quoted it right. You said that, and I don't know if I said he will come on Yom Kippur. If I did, I'm sorry. He's going to gather his elect on Yom Teruah, but then he's going to come and do judgment on the whole earth. That's the day of wrath. That's the Lord's day. So Yom Kippur. And he's going to be doing that on the Lord's Day, which is Yom Kippur. And that's the great trump, the sound of the great trump. That's when he's going to wage war on all the enemies. And he's the world cannot withstand the wrath of Yahweh on the earth for more than a day. There's no possible way. You know, so anyway, does somebody else have anything to do, anything to say? Joseph Ben-Horin, do you have a question, bro? Because I know you it's a little too early where you're at, so. I believe that Yeshua is the giver of the commandments.